Autoblog Podcast. I am Dan Roth. Joining me this evening is Zach Bowman, and Zach Bowman only.
I'm alone.
Yeah. And the Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of performance tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components. And those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. Hey, I talked to Shunk today.
You talked to Mr. Shunk? What did he have to say?
He was very excited. The S40 is sold.
Ah, huzzah.
Yeah, he was like, I told the guy all the problems with it. I cleaned it up. He's still coming to get it.
How much did he pay him to come get the car?
I guess. He's getting paid, as far as I know.
Wow.
And right. He doesn't...
And the guy knows that it locks itself automatically and some like unnecessarily, and sometimes the windows don't roll down and all that. This man knows all this?
Yeah, he knows that. He doesn't. I asked him if he knows whether or not it's the infamous S40. He was like, no. So I guess he's not cranking the price up based on the car's celebrity.
Sure, yeah. Well, that's a tricky line.
Yeah, and speaking of Volvos, I made this determination tonight as I drove my T5. Mm-hmm. I'm done. That is a trade-in.
Really? You're done with that car?
I'm done with that car. I'll fix the transmission on the other one, the 2.4T. That one I'll fix and keep because I've gone through that one a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But I have had it with the T5.
Wow. Man, just, this is a day.
I'm driving it, and I'm... Do you do this? Do you make this mental list of things that you need to get to on the car as you drive it?
Yes, every time. The trouble is, like, especially on the Miata, which is, you know, what my wife drives, like, that list goes straight out of my head the instant I get out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everything else that's laying around the house is... you know, has its own list, and sometimes the items on those lists are more pressing, so the Miata kind of gets pushed to the back. Like right now, like I guess it was weekend before last, we took it on this, you know, little 250-mile ride. It was spring before winter came back around and punched us all in the face. So we put the top down and did a little ride, and you know, took the back way out to Crossville, which is a, you know, fairly technical run. And you know, the car still has the rotors on it that came with it when we bought it, and the pads, and the rotors are starting to show their age. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, this car was sort of intended as a lifeboat. I was I knew it needed some things, and it was getting a little older, but it was my car. And so when the transmission started acting up on the other one, I was like, well, we'll just use this one and I'll fix that other one real quick. Mm-hmm. It's been months. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I can tell that one of the engine mounts needs replacement because there's a lot more vibration than there should be.
How many miles does this thing have?
160-something thousand.
These are things that should not be happening.
Well, they got hydraulic engine mounts on it. It's not uncommon. It's not uncommon. That doesn't shock me. But the exhaust, you know, the pipe is still fine, but the mild steel hangers that they put on the stainless steel pipe, the way they are, yeah, they catch all the road crap and they rot off. So now the exhaust is very happily smacking against the cross member.
I will give you $2 for this car.
No, I'm gonna force a dealer to give me like $3,000 if I can.
$20,000.
Yeah.
Do you think you could sell it privately for more money?
No, I would not feel good selling this car privately for more than about $2,500.
All right.
It's been hit. The bodywork wasn't done great. It was hit before I bought it. It's had a replacement transmission put in it. It's fine. It functions, but it has needs. You know, it needs all the shocks and struts, the steering wheel, steering rack groans. And I'm just like, you know, the other car, I did shocks and struts. I did exhaust. I did all that stuff. That car's pretty marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is just like, okay, it's driving right, more and more right. Like a piece of crap.
So second alternative, what if you trade in both Volvos? Okay, follow me now. So you get fairly regular press cars, so that's a good thing. You could pick up like a $2,500 truck, just like a beater truck. you know, just to haul stuff around at the house. And then, you know, on the rare occasion that you're out of a media vehicle, you've got something to drive to work if you have to, or a Jeep.
That's not a terrible idea. Anything that I pick up in that realm is going to have to accommodate the children and the child mm-hmm. seats and mm-hmm. have the safety gear that's comparable, if not better, to the Volvo. Man,
you love your children way too much. Has anybody ever told you that?
You have some of your own, and then we'll talk.
Listen. I'm just saying, and not that my father is the greatest example of parenting, but you know, we rode around in the freaking Scout for years, literally years, drove that thing back and forth from Knoxville to Cincinnati, and then Cincinnati to Virginia.
Yeah, no, I get you. I mean, and I realize, like, I grew up in a time where it was not uncommon to ride around with all the windows up, with a cigarette lit in the summer, with you know, no air conditioning. Like, okay, sure. Fine, but. This is not then, and you know.
Yeah, I understand. I get what you're saying.
I'll make my own mistakes that permanently scar my children for life.
All right, my thought is: do you need two vehicles that are super safe for kids? Could you not just have one that was super safe for kids, and then just plan who's going to have the kids, who's going to move the kids? That person gets the super safe.
That usually works. Mm-hmm. Usually works. It wouldn't be like I wouldn't need two brand new vehicles. Like I would be fine with like, you know, five. Even a 5 year old used car is going to be better than my 10 year old used cars.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I'd be fine with something in that realm, and then you know a much newer vehicle that does you know normal ferrying duties. So I follow you.
That's what I'm sticking with. Plan. Get rid of both of all those. Trade them, sell them, whatever you got to do. Get rid of both of them. And then just refresh your
fleet. But I'm gonna lose all that money, all that time.
No, yes,
the
yes,
silver
you are.
One, the no, silver
totally
one has
are.
Been gone through, and it's just like it's waiting now. It has to,
it's the waiting stuff. To take a dump on your chest is what it's waiting to do.
No. It's the Fords do the Cleveland thing.
See, that was funny. Now, see, you've got to ride out. You got to stop thinking about it in terms of return on investment, because a car is never a return on investment. It's just
I know.
It's just money out the window every time you turn around. And like that's what kills me, because you get on Craigslist and you see all these want ads are like, I just want the cheapest car possible. I have $800. I will buy a car. And I'm like, man, you have no idea what you're doing to yourself, because you're going to pay that $800, and I'm sure that's every last nickel and dime you can scrape up from the past whatever 3 months of working at McDonald's, and then 2 weeks down the line the car is something is going to happen that's going to cost you effectively the purchase cost of the car, right? It's just a black hole where you just keep shoveling money and time and blood and efforts and little tiny slivers of your soul. It's just you just got to write it off. Just accept it that it's gone. It's like every project I've had, and I know it's probably because I've got shitty, damn, crappy taste in. I'm even caffeinated, man. I can't keep a lid on it. I'm gonna be the worst father ever. Anyway.
No,
it's probably because it's probably because I have crappy taste in cars is what it is. But you know, every project I've had has been a horrible loss. I resurrect the Spitfire, and
if the other car had been if the other car were in the same position as my T5, where it's sort of languished and it hasn't had much other than like the bare necessities to keep it going, I would be more behind trading them both. It's just,
all right.
Like I just put a whole bunch of time in. It's you're right. It's always going to be a loss, but I'm just like, I want to get some of my wear and tear out of that stuff.
The knife edge that you're walking right now, right, is you can sell that car with all that stuff being done right now and possibly recoup, say 75.
No, I could recoup 40% of
mine. Okay, well, 40%. Or you drive it. Right, and you get you know whatever value it is that you're getting out of just driving the stupid thing, and then go to sell it, and you get none of that money back at all, right? Because the car has devalued to the point that it's just worthless. I mean, 10 years old.
Oh, they're both pretty much virtually worthless.
Right. So
I'm dreaming if I think I'm actually going to get $3,000 in trade.
Yeah,
that's Jesus. Yeah.
Well, trade them both. Get rid of them both. Get yourself something else. That's what I'm saying. Do it.
Yeah, I really, really, really want a Durango.
Then get a Durango, man.
Really wanted it. Anyway.
There's nothing between you and a Durango but signing on a dotted line. That's all it is. says the man with a fleet of paid-off horrible vehicles.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is just the whole paid-off bit. But and yes, it would be cheaper to fix them and keep them going. It's just one cost here versus many tiny costs there.
Well, it's, I have this conversation with my wife probably once every 3 months or so when I get, like, you know, up to my eyeballs in something that should not have taken this long, and it's basic maintenance on a car or whatever. And I look at her, I'm like, you realize you could have married anyone, right? You could have married someone who could have happily written a check to pay for this work, and you would have seen your husband for the past 3 weeks, and he wouldn't be stressed out and bleeding and aggravated all the time, and it would have been a magical experience. Sometimes I think that's the better way to go. As much as I like working on my own things and knowing that it's right, or at least as right as I'm capable of doing it, I think there's at some point there's probably some merit to just paying someone and having your time to spend with the people that you want to spend time with instead of your crappy car.
Yeah. I would prefer like one sort of thing that doesn't have to convey everybody in a safe manner. Like, if it's a toy, that's one thing, but I you know, not at this point. And so I don't find much enjoyment from sort of just like the Swedish Animal Rescue League thing.
Get rid of them both, man. Get rid of the Swedes. Get rid of the Swedes.
So let's talk about new cars.
All right.
What are you driving?
So, my long months of suffering in crossover and hybrid.
No more Lambdas for you?
No more Lambdas, at least not this week. Tomorrow's a new day. But right now, I in the driveway, I've got the 2013 Scion FRS and the 2013 Honda Civic Si Coupe with a 6-speed manual. Yeah, the FRS is an automatic, 6-speed auto.
I had the FRS as an auto. What did you think of it?
Okay, man. All right, so Beth and I, my wife and I, drove this car from Knoxville to Washington, D.C. and back over the weekend, over the long weekend. We took Friday off. So that's probably about 8 hours one way, plus time running around. Yeah, I'd say we put probably about 1,100 miles on this car, somewhere around there. Man, all right, so first off, I have to say, the handling on this car is really, really, really superb. I mean, it's one of those rare cars that just it makes you want to track down infamous roads, the roads that have haunted you throughout your life, or that you have lusted after and enjoyed throughout your life, and just, you know, put your boot heel on their neck, because this car can do it. You know, people have bellyached about the tires, and yeah, the tires give up pretty easy, but the joy of that is that the car has super low thresholds, which means that it's fun to drive without, you know, carrying lots of momentum and getting yourself in trouble or carrying lots of speed. It's a perfect vehicle to learn car control in, because everything happens nice and progressively, very predictably. You can induce a slide whenever you want to with the traction control muted. You can't turn it all the way off that I know of, at least not with, you know, easy button pushes. There may be a key sequence. Because I went to do, you know,
I don't know. I saw a video of Glucker doing a donut with that car.
I don't know how he did it. He must have been poking around on the owner's manual or forum or whatever. Yeah. I couldn't readily deduce it. And if I'm driving a rear wheel drive sports car, I just want to be able to just do donuts at my command. You know, whenever I feel the urge to be a jackass. All right.
So I felt like that was sort of his point was like, oh, you think it's underpowered? Check this out. And it's like, you know, and the thing is, it's not really a good measure of the amount of power, just because it has those hockey puck Prius tires on it. So
my issue is not that it's underpowered. The engine is dead as a doornail under 5,500 RPM. But as long as you are willing to just strangle this thing and just hammer the living snot out of it, it's very quick. It feels very quick.
It feels certainly feels lively. I didn't mind. I mean, even with the auto, I think actually it may be a little better with the auto because of the torque multiplication.
Accurate. Yeah,
which sucks to say because I'm a shift for myself kind of guy.
And the auto, you know, it isn't bad. It's got the paddle shifters and it's got a manual, you know, quote unquote manual mode. And the paddle shifters are fairly quick. You still have to use some anticipation because it's not going to be just dual clutch, just, you know, click and pop, you know, there's a little bit of a delay there. So you have to anticipate that and it won't let you, you know, downshift all willy nilly. It'll stop you if it thinks that you're going to nuke something, which I suppose is a good thing. The engine though, man, all right. So having this next to the SI and driving them back to back, I cannot help but feel this car would have been phenomenal with an inline four.
The argument is that it messes up the balance.
Oh, God, they can shove that argument up their...
All right, beep.
Mm-hmm. I don't care. I don't care. And I'm going to say that's a load of crap because MX-5, right? Right?
No, I think the MX-5 doesn't have the superb chassis balance. And
no, I agree with that. Number one, the MX-5 is super old. Number two, it's a convertible. And I would say that right out of the box, you know, FRS to MX-5 Sport, I think the FRS is by far the better handler. It's also considerably more harsh, just in terms of vibration and all that noise. Anyway, back to the engine note. It's that coarse boxer engine note, and while some guys get off on that, after a while, it just feels like you're driving a tractor.
You know, I hate the way that engine idles. They talk about how
so rough.
Yeah,
God. Like I got in the freaking Honda, and I'm sitting at a stoplight, and I had and after driving the FRS for, you know, all weekend basically, I'm sitting at a stoplight in the Honda, and I'm like, is it running? Because I had to like look down and check the tach to see.
Well, yeah, but that's Honda too, like right, which, Subaru to Honda is like.
I know, I get that. That's still not an excuse. You know? If freaking Honda can do it, Subaru, you ought to be able to do it.
Well, my surprise.
And I've ranted and raved against the Boxer over and over again. I'm not going to do it again here. I'm just saying.
All right.
I love the FRS so freaking much, and the only thing that's stopping me from just curling up and making sweet love to this car is the engine.
That's stopping you.
That's it. Well, you know, I've got low standards.
The rest of it doesn't seem unnatural at all or anything. Okay. All right.
Anyway,
I think a while back I was Googling V8 FRS because I really think that car with a pushrod V8
doesn't even need a V8.
It doesn't need it, but it would be much better with a pushrod V8. I'm not talking. They did make one with some Lexus V8. That's a big, heavy, giant thing. No, I want a nice, compact pushrod V8.
Like the one in the McLaren. That may not be a pushrod. Anyway,
like the one in, say, the Corvette. Which I'd settle for a much wimpier version of that engine.
I'm sure somebody will make it happen. I don't know. I think there was a missed opportunity to go with an inline four on this car, even if it, you know, bumped up the center of gravity slightly or whatever. I think it could have been engineered around, and I think it would have been fine.
But what engine did they have that would go in there? And I guess
anything, you know, even anything from the how much power does the Corolla mill make these days?
I think the 1.8 what is it? 1.8 that's the standard engine.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't make much.
Well, I would think. Well, okay, if it's
but
good
they
enough.
They have a 2.4. The Camry has a 2.4. They have a 2.7 in the Tacoma. Completely wrong for the car.
Right. Well, a 2.4 would have probably done just fine. Had plenty of power, gotten decent fuel economy. It seems like a missed opportunity. I love the car. The back, it does technically have a back seat, which is nice.
mm-hmm. That's a nice place to throw your stuff.
I fit two bridesmaids in the back seat of that car this weekend. Just saying.
Yeah,
totally
because
totally doable.
You know, I'm just gonna leave all of that statement right there and move on.
That's fine. Totally fine.
I anticipate that at a certain point, they're going to figure out how to TRD this thing in some way.
They have to. So drive this car. My personal, you know, self-loathing loves it because it's kind of punishing and it's loud. God, is it loud? But everything that makes it a good driver's car sort of trumps all the things that make it not a good car to live with, right?
Yes.
So the steering is very communicative and it feels great. The brakes are very responsive and communicative and they feel great. The driver's position is fantastic. You're nestled down in the car. The seats are phenomenal. There isn't another car in this price bracket that offers better seats.
Maybe I'm getting fat.
I was gonna say something to you about
the FRS seats hurt my back. They squeezed my shoulder blades in a weird way.
See, I mean, I was in the car for literally, well, it was less than 8 hours, but it was, you know, pushing 8 hours on Sunday, and it, you know, I was tired, but more from the noise that the car made than, you know, the seats. I thought the seats were fine. They're super bolstered. I mean.
Yeah, they are.
Lots of bolstered action going on there, so that's, you know, something to be aware of. But if you're looking for a car that's going to be a daily driver, these things will start to wear on you. The noise and just how rigid the suspension is, and the fact that it's kind of smallish and all that.
But then you hit an on ramp, and you're like,
and then you just magic. And yeah. It's one of those things where the car is super confidence inspiring, and you come into a corner and you think that you're pushing the car, and then the on ramp tightens a little bit, and you know that little Danger Will Robinson robot's going off in the back of your head, and the car just zips right through it, and you're like, nope, I was nowhere near this car's limits, not even moderately. And the only car that I can compare that to, that same sensation, is the Cayman. I mean, it really is.
I was just going to say that it feels like it went to Porsche school.
Well,
in a great way.
Exactly. And I think what it is, if I had to write a review of this car, I think I would start it by saying that we've all been deceived, because we've been led to believe that cars like the Civic Si and the Focus ST and the WRX STI, those are what, you know, we're supposed to expect from the sport compact segment. They're family cars that were then gone through by a team of engineers and transmuted into sportiness, and that's total crap. Let me get there. It's total crap, because this is a car that was designed and engineered for a single purpose, and the single purpose was handle really well. And the finished result is a car that does that job so well compared to everything else out there.
Yeah, it definitely makes me forgive. There's two things about the car that make me forgive its shortcomings, which are not insignificant. Did you find yourself just staring at it?
Oh, it's so good looking.
You know, pictures cannot convey how good looking that car is.
No, all right. So when they first came out with the concept, I thought the concept was gorgeous, and then they revised it, and I thought it looked overwrought and sort of crappy. But I think in photos, it always appears larger than it actually is. When it's in the flesh, it's very compact, and the proportions are gorgeous, and it's got those big hips, and it's just it looks like something that.
The details get me. Just the subtle, restrained details. It's very German in a lot of ways, and I like that. It's only, you know, it's got that Bauhaus sparseness to it. That's just really great.
Yeah, you know, it draws kids in parking lots, you know, and that's pretty much the baseline for what is a cool car. You know, what's something that people want to look at is whether or not it'll grab a kid's attention.
Yeah, and I mean the driving experience is the other thing it makes up for, because like you said, you know, it's loud. The Scion has a terrible interior. It's got the
The stereo sucks so hard.
Yes, the stereo is awful, and then Bluetooth integration is like across the board. That is terrible in Toyota products. It's awful. It's just like, you know, this car makes me want to punch it in the face in a lot of different ways. But then again, I'm not gonna, because it also makes me smile.
Yeah, and I will avoid comparisons to you know, former significant others.
But you were saying, though, the SI is the better car.
Well,
Chewpad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's and again, it kills me to say that. It kills me to say that so badly. I should preface this by saying, you know, my love affair with the Civic is long and well documented. I had a little EJ coupe that I tracked and modified heavily, and that car was all brakes and suspension and tire and no power, and it was, you know, absolutely miserable to live with, which is part of the reason we sold it. This car is very different. When they redesigned the Civic, I guess this was probably, when was that? 2006?
When it got its nice wedgie spiffy redesign?
Yeah, 2007.
2006.
Okay, 2006. So I had this car, the redesigned car, on a poster. I went to the dealer and got one of the first, you know, posters that they had of the car, and that was on my wall in my college dorm. And this is how badly I wanted this car.
Wait.
I know. I was a man of aspirations.
You were in college in 2006.
Yeah, I graduated in 07.
All right.
Matlock's on, Pops, if you want to shuffle on down in your robe and slippers.
I'll wait till Perry Mason.
Uh-huh. Anyway, so clearly love this car a lot. Did the launch for this most recent one here a couple of years back. Enjoyed it immensely. It feels very similar. If any car is indicative of the curse of model bloat, it's the Civic. The car has just gotten massive. I mean, freakishly large. It's pushing a little over 3,000 pounds now, which is a lot. But one of the benefits of that is now that there's lots of usable space inside. Headroom is ridiculous. Legroom is ridiculous. You can put, you know, full size adults up front and have full size adults in the back, and nobody feels cramped or infringed upon. But, you know, that's all true of the base Civic, and the SI is something a little bit more special. It's got the 201 horsepower 2.4 four-cylinder. So technically within one horsepower of the 2.0 that's in the FRS, but makes about 20 more pound-feet of torque at 170 pound-feet of torque. The difference between power delivery in these two cars is night and day. Plop your foot down on the FRS and you just wait until 5,500 RPM before the thing comes alive. The Honda, meanwhile, which is not an engine that's known for torque at all.
Well, this version of the SI has been retuned.
So right, and it now offers more torque, and the difference is night and day. I mean, the Honda is a car that will just hustle. I mean, it just pops, and it's got the whole front wheel drive fall all over its face and understeer thing going on. You know, if you're pushing into a corner.
So,
which is,
yeah, that's
crappy,
right?
But that's typical front wheel drive stuff, and you can sort of play to that, you know, if you've suffered through that long enough.
Or you can just buy an FRS, or you can really splurge for the BRZ, which actually comes with a leather interior and a somewhat better stereo that still sucks, and I enjoy rear wheel drive handling.
Okay, all right. So steering on the SI sucks. Completely detached. You have no idea what's going on in the front wheels at all. Clutch is worthless. It's the throw on it. It's so hydraulic and soft, and anybody can drive me.
But Honda with manuals was always so good.
The transmission is fantastic. The throw on the shift lever is great. The gearing is great. All of that's really good. The clutch just sucks. It feels so economy car. It's a freaking tragedy.
I don't care how good the transmission is if the clutch doesn't work as part of the symphony.
I understand. Let's see here. So the brakes, however, brakes are fantastic and took a serious beating this afternoon. I felt really guilty. I didn't get a chance to drive the car last week.
I felt guilty, so I went out and mercilessly flogged it. So.
Well, I wanted to drive the freaking thing, and there is a very good loop here. It's about 3 hours, you know, total start to finish, and runs across two different mountains here and comes out of the state park. It's a really gorgeous drive. Did the loop, car stood up fantastic. You know, brakes took, you know, quite the beating, which is always a bit of a shortfall on the Civic end. And now that they've added more weight, I was more concerned on that, but they did just fine. The suspension, you know, it's obviously tuned to be a bit more comfortable than Sirius. The FRS is, I don't want to say it's punishing, because it you know, it will absorb expansion joints and potholes and all the rest of that, you know, fairly well. But it's definitely stiff, and it's, you know, definitely jarring, and you do feel, you know, quite a bit of the road, especially on a long ride, which is what you want in a car that you're going to be hammering on a car that you're going to be driving every day. Maybe not so much. And the SI is a little bit more comfortable and still shapes up pretty nice once you get sawing on it.
So the SI is the car that you would buy if you had to.
And here's the worst part. Okay, so the SI total cost $24,805.
Oh, the FRS was more expensive, wasn't it?
$26,085. The FRS did not come with navigation. It did not come with satellite radio. It did not come with a rear backup camera.
Okay, so none of those are really like a great loss.
Sure, no.
Especially now comparing Scion to Honda in that arena. Sure. Like, both of those nav systems stink. The backup camera in a car like that is pointless.
The infotainment system in the SI is archaic. It's just, it sucks. I mean, everything about it is just slow and miserable, and the graphics are slow and miserable, and it kind of just made me wince to know just how good these things are in a car like the Dart, and how crappy they are in the Honda. So that's definitely painful.
Well, if I'm spending $24,000 on a car, though, the Dart would be a serious contender for my money. Not because it's
not in the driving category. I mean, it's a good driver, but I think the SI is so much more fun.
It's not on full alert like the SI tends to be,
right,
for sure. But I think I'd trade some of that for the comfort and quiet. Man, I sound like an old man. God,
it's true. You very much do.
Huh?
I don't know. You know, if I had to pick between these two, it would be a rough way to go. The SI gets a little bit worse fuel economy, 31 to the FRS is 34. It's just the engine kills me in the FRS.
Did you get 34 out of the FRS? I did not get 34.
I got
out of the FRS.
30.4, almost pure highway, but that was running at about 80. So, you know.
Yeah. I think, honestly, you'll find more satisfaction in the Civic if you have to drive it, like, every day in terms of, like, a commute. But if it's a car that you can just go out and drive to enjoy driving, if you're, say, an auto journalist who has a three-hour loop in your backyard and you don't have anything other, you know, pressing on you besides fixing your crappy Mustang. Yeah, okay. So by the
end, look at the fucking.
If you're Zach Bowman,
pot calling the kettle black here. Crappy. I'd rather have a crappy Mustang than a crappy Volvo. Is all I'm saying on that.
Your Mustang is far more entertaining and interesting than either of my Swedish meatballs. That's for sure. I won't argue there. So it's a four-cylinder kind of show today. I've got a Taurus with an EcoBoost 4.
That sounds horrible.
It's magnificent, actually.
Is this Dan Roth magnificent, or is this actually good?
It's actually good, and I was surprised at how good it is. I mean, it's a little weird because it's got that four-cylinder sound that always sounds like halfway cheap. We're just conditioned to just think of, like, okay, four-cylinder, you got the base engine. Right. But the EcoBoost 4 in this thing does remarkably well. It's a turbo 4, so it actually has a decent torque curve to it.
Is that the 2.0? Is that what that is?
You know, I had the sticker around, and I don't have it right in front of me. Why to the Googles?
Keep talking. I'll look
it up. Go look it up. But the way it responds, even in a car this big, it is pretty impressive. And when you put your boot into it, once it figures out that you actually want the power, it doesn't even feel like it's winded like I thought it might. It's just a really good combination. It's pretty well balanced. And the rest of the Taurus, you know, they've made a very good big Ford out of the old Volvo S80. Which is what it started as.
It is a 2-liter. What always kills me about the Taurus is it feels small inside. To be as huge of a car as it is, it feels, close. Yeah, well, because
it does, because the roof line on this generation, like when they first came out with it, when it was the 500, it was very roomy inside. And then they went with the Taurus and they flattened out the roof and they gave it the swoopier C pillars and stuff. And you lost headroom in the back seat. It's got that big wide center console, so it feels tighter than it should. It doesn't feel super space efficient, but it is a pretty roomy car. It's very comfortable. Some of the stuff you can tell, like the latch anchors, they're not spaced any wider than they are in my S60s, which are on the same basic platform. So you go to put child seats in and you're like, wait, they kind of like sit in the middle of both seat cushions. They're several inches in from the side. So and I'm sure that's one of the hard points. It just could not be moved for the platform. But it's you open the door and you realize that like sort of the doors are tacked onto the outside of a car that's just been made as large as it possibly can go on its bones. But it drives with pretty good poise. It's pretty well controlled. It's actually a great highway car.
Yeah, I've driven the SHO, and I honestly think that's a great car. I'm not sure I would buy it because of the interior space issues, and I think the Germans are offering up a little bit better metal in that category. But
yeah, and the SHO has, I guess they fixed the brakes this year, but the brakes
they're not fixed.
Oh yeah,
I'll tell you that much. I mean, they made a big stink about how they'd made the brakes bigger and all the rest of that crap, but it didn't do a blessed thing for that car. It just Ford to me, it seems like the brakes are always not quite there. You know, the pedal's always soft. Initial bite's always a little lackluster.
Brakes in this car feel good.
Really? Do they really?
Yep. I haven't driven your loop with it, but
you gotta come to Knoxville, Dan. We'll have a good time.
All right. I don't disagree. In general driving, the brakes feel good. They feel pretty tight and responsive. And the handling on this car, they started with a good platform and they've really tweaked it and tweezed it. I mean, they've been building this basic car since 2005, so they've figured it out. It feels solid. It rides really well. It actually handles decently if you pitch it into a corner, although it feels kind of weird because it's big. But it's probably the best big Ford there's ever been, and it's probably not selling very well at all. But part of that is the fact that you look at the sticker on this car. What do you think it should cost?
Oh, so this is the two. What kind of fuel economy are you getting? Are they selling the EcoBoost as an upgrade over the base car?
Yeah, I think it's an upgrade over the base car. This is a limited as well.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm getting, let's see, I filled it up this morning and drove all the way in, hit a little bit of stop and go from like Concord, Lexington into my office, which is like 5 or 6 miles. So from fill up to actually getting the parking lot at work, I think it was like 28.9 miles per gallon.
What's the sticker say you're supposed to get?
And a little more correct average fuel economy on the way back, like, so morning and afternoon trips. I mean, it's like 26.5, which is pretty good for something this large.
Okay.
Sticker is $40,000.
$40,000.
That's a lot of money. Like, it's
for a family sedan.
It's a nice,
a large
big
family
Ford.
You know what I would have over that any day of the week?
Don't say 3 Series.
Chrysler 300. Any day of the week. Or a Dodge Charger. Any day of the week. With the 3.6. I will say that. Up one side and down the other. I think it drives better. It's more comfortable. It has more room inside. I like the infotainment system infinitely better.
Oh, yes.
Which, again, we don't need to go down that road. But
no.
That's something you really have to consider if you're looking at this car.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to get it without my Ford Dodge, is there?
Not the Limited, no.
Yeah.
This car has Equipment Group 302A on it, which is a bunch of crap.
I love Ford's package naming scheme. Cracks me up. Oh, it's so sexy. Oh, 302A. Yeah. Man. Legendary 302A. Woo!
It comes with a bunch of stuff you just do not want. And it costs like $3,500, and so you could get this car down to about $3,600 or $36,000 or so, I guess.
It's still deep chunk of change.
It's a lot of money.
I still think I'd rather front wheel drive. I assume yours. Yeah. God, it's not even all wheel drive.
Yep, it's better at 36,000 than it is at 40.
But yeah, that's fantastic. Great.
I still
think I'd wind up with a Charger or a 300.
I think you're wrong.
I just like those cars better.
Well, I think honestly, you get a more useful car for your money. And the Taurus is not bad. It's a decently big car, but it's space inefficient, and the trunk, especially, like, big trunk. Yay! Right. Good luck getting stuff in it. You know, because it's just where the roof comes down. It's got that short little trunk lid and everything. The one thing that I saw on this car that I really like is the factory strut tower brace in the front that I want to actually remove and see if it will fit the factory strut towers in my Volvos. But maybe I won't, because I'm going to get rid of the Volvos. I'm going to burn them or something.
You know how much that part would cost from Ford?
I was going to look it up, actually. I was going to grab the part number off of it. Because
I have to say is $1,500 for manifolds. That's all I have to say to you. If you're looking at new parts from Ford, that's all I have to say.
Well, that's because you have, like, the Ford Unicorn.
Oh, whatever.
Seriously.
Leave my Unicorn alone.
Who buys a V10 truck?
It has 10 cylinders, Dan.
Great.
There's going to come a day where there's nothing on the road but 10 cylinders. For a reason, mind you. But
yeah, because none of them can find manifolds.
But I value the weirdness of that. I really do. I think it's cool as hell. Anyway.
Okay.
Let's not get back onto the truck things. It's just a...
No, you don't want to talk about the truck? What?
Labyrinth of depression. I'm going to buy the damn manifolds. I'm going to buy the manifolds. I'm going to put them on. I'm going to risk breaking off one of those stupid studs and having to take the head off to take it to a freaking machine shop to get all that crap out.
Yeah. Oh, so wait, here's Equipment Group 302A. You'll love this.
Okay.
Sony audio system.
Ooh.
Doesn't sound that good.
Nope.
Intelligent access with push button start. It's handy enough.
Is it one of those systems where you can walk up and unlock the door? So that's fantastic.
Yeah, but it's not worth $3,500.
Right.
Because the cross-traffic alert and blind spot thing, like, I ignore that anyway, so no.
Screw everybody else. Dan Roth is coming through.
No, I set my mirrors and I
I'm kidding.
Pay attention.
I'm kidding.
Auto high beams and rain-sensing wipers.
Worthless.
Worthless. Again, it also includes the stuff from 301A, which is $2,700. So you could forget that stuff and go down to climate controlled front seats. It's nice, but it's not something I'm going to spend $2,700 on. And that also has the blind spot stuff and the push button start and the Sony audio system. So you could make... You could get this car at $33,890.
That's better.
That's a much better deal. But when you load it up with the stuff, and I guess there's a couple of other options it's got. When you load it up with the stuff, it's a lot more expensive. But anyway, that's enough of that.
Okay.
How's your truck? What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to put the manifolds on it. That's what I'm going to do.
You're going to go with the banks, or are you going to...
Yeah, I'm going to go with the banks.
Huzzah. You'll need to make a video of that or an audio recording of some sort. And
it's going to suck so hard.
It won't be that bad.
It's going to be crappy.
I'm telling you, Aero Croil for a few weeks.
I'm going to PB Blaster the crap out of it.
Aero Croil is better than PB Blaster.
Really?
Yeah, Aero Croil is the stuff. I'm not sure where you can get it, but it's good stuff. It'll come in a box. It's marked Orm D.
Cool. When you
ship it UPS, because it's terribly hazardous.
And it's my kind of jam.
Yeah, but it's good stuff. Hey, there are some topics we should probably talk about.
All right.
Unless, I mean, you know, we could talk about the horse, but we could talk about that later once we get to some topics. Well, okay, so we'll talk about some of your favorite things. Jeep Moab concepts. Did you see those?
Did I see them? I wrote the post.
Then you saw them. Which one is your favorite? I will tell you which one is my favorite.
Definitely the Sand Trooper 2.
Really?
Definitely the Sand Trooper 2. And you know why?
Why?
Portal
axles. Wait, no, I know why. Portal axles.
Also, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all I have to say. There's portal axles.
I'll say the flat top because it has a has no B pillar and it's got lots of brown.
You and Pockert love the flat top.
Pockert likes it. All right, I'm gonna
he likes the flat top and he likes what's the one with the bikini top? What's that one? The pork chop. He likes the pork chop a lot.
I'm gonna pick the Trailhawk then.
The Trailhawk's cool because it's the diesel, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, and it also looks badass.
It's
traffic cone orange.
It's so tough.
I didn't take it all in at first, and then I kept looking at the Trailhawk too, and I was like, man, black wheels, knobby tires.
Yeah, and it's
stride height.
It's the ruckus. It's the ruckus.
Yeah, but the thing that I liked about the flat top was brown accents, earth tone outside, brown leather. I mean, it's brown and tan.
Mm-hmm.
I like that already, right off the bat. I like that.
True. I mean, I get it.
So my biggest question on these, I guess we should back up. And what Jeep does every year is they have the Easter Jeep Safari. That's out in Moab, Utah, and they always bring some concepts. Now, last year, I was much more excited about this because they brought the crazy, bonkers, awesome...
Forward control! Yes,
the mighty FC with... Not only was it a forward control, it had portal axles and all kinds of goodness and tartan seats and just... I mean,
you could just hear Jeep guys weeing themselves with
seriously
with glee. I mean, all across the country, you could hear it.
But yeah, I mean, it's forward control, and it was just perfect.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was interesting this year. They seem to have sort of toned down the crazy stuff and just sort of shown off what you can do with a Wrangler or a Grand Cherokee, which is totally fine.
Yeah, I see a lot of. You look through it and it's like, oh, prototype, like the prototype beadlocks, and it has the Mopar Performance winch and skid plates and all.
And you can theoretically buy those axles from Jeep, those portal axles. You can do. Okay, so maybe we should explain what portal axles are.
They're awesome.
They are. So on a standard solid axle, the center line for the hub is the center line for the axle, right? So your ground clearance is determined by pretty much the axle tube and the center difference or the differential chunk in each axle. On portal axles, the axle line is tucked way above the hub because the way the hubs are designed allows the whole four-wheel drive hub assembly to sort of dogleg down to where the wheel and tire is. So that increases your ground clearance by a massive amount. That's hugely popular among serious off-road guys for that reason. Incredibly tough, stupid expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's it makes very little sense to see that on something like a four-door Wrangler, which is kind of why it's awesome.
Yeah, but when you're crawling, like, you can also get a little more reduction out of it because you've got another set of gears there at the end. Like, you know, it's very much the same idea, the same concept as how the Hotchkiss drive actually put the pinion on a differential lower than the center of the ring gear. Same kind of thing. It's playing around with gears and where they mesh to get more clearance. And it's just very, very cool for an off-roader because you get that extra clearance and you get a tougher axle, I think, out of it.
Yep.
It's just, I mean...
You know, Jeep did a bunch of engine swaps. I think the Sand Trooper has a 5.7 in it. The Wrangler Mopar Recon has the 6.4. So that's the 470 horse craziness that's in the 300 SRT8. It's cool stuff. Was it the Stitch or the Slim? No, it was the Stitch that has that's super lightweight.
That's the one that you can see through the bodywork,
right? Which is really cool. It's down to like under 3,000 pounds, which is pretty great.
The Slim bored the crap out of me, and basically the Slim is the catalog car that.
Which is totally cool. I've got a bunch of friends who are into the Jeep thing, and I can totally get the addictiveness of just being able to go, you know, I want this part, and you point to it in the catalog, and you click on it, and then it arrives at your door 2 days later, and you bolt it on, and you're on the trail on the next day, instead of being like, okay, I need to figure out how to make this work. Allow me to spend 3 months researching how to make this work, reading up write-ups of guys who have tried and failed, figure that I could probably make it work because I'm somehow more special, fail, try a different route.
And
6 months later, you still have a car that's in pieces. I mean, a Jeep that's in pieces.
Sounds like something you may have done a time or two.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I totally get that. And that's part of the reason that the Wrangler's popular. And, you know, it's a very capable off-road machine that you can sort of build to fit your budget. You can go from, you know, I put slightly larger tires and 1-inch pucks on it to I have, you know, a crazy suspension lift and portal axles and massive tires. It's fun, and it's fun to see, you know, the goodies from the catalogs, like all the cool Bourne winches and the Beast bumpers and all that stuff. It's cool.
Yeah, I look forward to this every year because
I want to go. I want to go to Easter Jeep Safari. It just looks awesome. Actually, two of my friends, one of the guys bought a JK Unlimited Rubicon. I guess this was 2 days ago, and then another one bought the JK Unlimited literally tonight.
Are they enjoying their $45,000 Jeep?
No, these were all used. So the Rubicon was under 20, which was just a screaming deal.
Yeah.
That one came home, and he immediately had to put a brake caliper on it, and then the turning indicators stopped working. So go Chrysler.
How much mud is caked to the inside of the frame?
It looked really clean. I mean, I saw it at night. So
oh, it looked really. Yeah, I saw it at night. Great.
I mean, I will say that the popularity of the Wranglers is kind of a great thing because they're exploding. Everybody wants them. So few people take them off road.
Yeah. Oh, they're like Harleys in that sense. Like you can get perfect Wrangler that has done really no miles.
Nothing. Yeah. And, like, you know, he let me drive it tonight, and there's, like, this little ditch out in front of my house, and he's like, okay, so disconnect the sway bar, put it in four low, put it in first gear, and just let out on the clutch, and the thing just kind of, like, army crawled its way through the ditch, and I was like,
yeah, crawling with them is just, like,
so freaking cool.
And they feel so perfect doing it, too. It's just,
like, floats over everything, and I'm used to riding around in the Scout, and the Scout's, like, a little, like, chuck wagon buckboard thing that just kind of, like, rickety-dicks its way across everything, shakes your kidneys out of your tail end.
Nope, the Wrangler Rubicon. See, the Wrangler Rubicon does that on the road.
Right. Yeah.
The Scout just does it all the time.
Right.
But, you know, it's also 40 years older, so.
I know the cheap and easy answer is always going to be a Wrangler, and that breaks my heart a little bit. But anyway, moving on.
Yeah. All right. So one of these days, I think if you beg enough, they'll let you go.
Yeah, that's probably true. No, that's probably true. I should probably just make that happen. Do some more begging.
I concur. You should go.
Come with me, Dan. We'll do the podcast in the cab of a Wrangler. It'll be fantastic.
You know, make it happen, Zach. Make it happen.
All right, I'll get on it.
So series overkill, Shelby 1000. This car is, Shelby has jumped the shark.
I don't know. It's kind of awesome.
1,200 horsepower.
So, the current GT500 is a lot of car and can't make use of all its power. It's 662 ponies in the GT500 is a lot for that chassis. And
it's also the old modular engine. And I just... it smells like sulfur in here. That is the engine of Satan.
Yeah, say no more. So Shelby basically decided, you know what that car needs? It actually needs 1,200 horsepower. So let's make that happen. I'm sure it's... I don't know what it's like to drive. I assume it's terrifying.
You know what it's like to drive? It's like a midlife crisis. It's just a very expensive thing with far more horsepower than you ever use, and you basically just... What you need to do is go to Michigan, right, and just sort of idle up and down Woodward Avenue.
Quietly.
I mean, that's what it's for, right?
I bet you can take off in fourth gear in this car.
Probably. You could probably get one of those old, like, Model T treadmills and power your neighborhood with it.
Oh, that would be cool.
You know, like, what do they call it? The light plant. Yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
A little dynamo.
Yeah.
Especially there where the houses are spread out, you could probably power 5 square miles of Tennessee.
It's probably true, actually.
662 horsepower.
And it would sound so good.
Yeah.
I want to see a video of this thing. So $155,000. What else would you buy?
Not including the cost of the car.
Oh, that's right.
It's you know what I would buy? I would buy a house.
Dan, that's not in the rules. You can't buy a house. What car would you buy for $200,000?
Miura.
I'd buy two GTRs.
I'd buy a Miura.
That's pretty good.
Miura. That is one of those cars that just seared itself into my memory the first time I saw one. And with 200 grand, you could probably buy one.
I would say Miura's probably... I don't know how much Miura's cost. You know why? Because I don't shop for Lamborghinis.
That's... Okay. That's fair. You should. You might be surprised. You could probably find yourself a late 70s, early 80s Lamborghini.
Call for price. That's why I don't.
For like $25,000. Like, it'll be sort of ugly horse grade, but it'll be a Lamborghini. And you could be like, hey, I got
it. I'd put a small block in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would totally. I've seen Ferrari 400i's like that. You know, they're V12 and they had a stupid 3-speed turbo hydromatic. Whatever.
That sounds horrible.
You just take that out and you put an LT1 and a 700R4 and you're good to go. Or what is the other one? The 4L60E or something like that. Anyway, we are completely off track. So you're on the, you would go for this car? Because I think it's just Shelby overkill and I'm kind of not impressed.
I wouldn't buy it, but I'd certainly drive it.
Do you find it impressive? Because I find it disgusting.
I think it's cool. I think it's... why not? If you can pull 1,200 horsepower out of a Mustang, it'd be absolutely useless. Why not?
Okay, first of all, it looks stupid.
It doesn't look stupid. It looks kind of.
What's with the giant 1000 down there? It's just like,
all right, graphics.
They cut
graphics
up like a Escalade hybrid graphics kit for that. It's just really. Who wants to drive around with a big number on the rocker?
Shelby's kind of lost their mind when it comes to styling. I don't know what to tell them about that. But yeah, I'd keep the Shelby intercooler. I'd ditch the graphics on the rockers in the back and just run it.
Yeah.
I like the super freaking fat rear tires, the big littles. That's kind of cool.
At least it doesn't have chrome wheels.
Yeah, I like the brushed. It looks good.
Yeah. That's just not my thing, I guess. And don't get me wrong. I really, really am... I'm very entertained by high horsepower vehicles. I thoroughly enjoyed the CTS-V, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and then yeah, the GT500 is fantastic in spite of, you know, how much power it makes.
I don't know. This maybe I've just sort of grown apart from what Shelby's doing, and just I'm.
I think Shelby's a little out of touch with everyone other than the, you know, gold chain and wife beater crowd. Send your hate mail to zach.bilma@club.com.
They're not going to send hate mail. They're just going to show up with a bat.
That's fine. I have guns.
You okay? You.
Anyway. No, I don't know. I think it's totally fun. All right. CTS. What do you think?
Well, hang on. The Autoblog podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of summer tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. Our copy still says winter tires, but this is the last gasp of winter. It's hanging on tenaciously. I'm sure you guys are getting some good weather.
Yeah, Beth had to drive the F-250 today because of snow, and then today while I was bombing around in the SI, covered quite a bit of elevation. It was snowing the entire time, but it was like the perfect snow because it was snowing, but the roads were just damp, so everything else was white. It was absolutely gorgeous. It was very cool.
Yeah, we didn't get any snow out of this one yet. So
really,
yeah, I think it's just gonna be South Coast, so we're not gonna get it, but. We keep saying snow tires in our copy. I think it's now time to start thinking about your summer high performance tires.
Good thing I left those on the Miata all season.
Spiffy all seasons. But anyway, CTS, that thing leaked a lot.
Looks good.
Looks really good.
Man, Cadillac, way to rock it.
That is a car that's just going to look so good next to its German competition. I think I'm very impressed with it, because my worry about the sort of GM resurgence has been like, oh, when are they going to lose it? And this,
well, it seems like Cadillac is the brand of all the brands that has it together the most, you know?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
I think the XTS, for, you know, despite my complaints with the car, I think it's a very solid entry, and I think the ATS is a really good machine. Always been a fan of the CTS, and this looks to certainly sharpen that car considerably. There's a lot more ATS in the design, especially up in the front, and that's certainly not a bad thing.
I love the drama. Like, you, it sounds gimmicky when you're like, yeah, they got these LED lights that sort of trace
bumper to fender, but yeah, it looks so good.
So it dramatic looks, and it looks really good.
And you see this car, and like the first thing out of my mouth was bam.
Did you do that? Were you sitting alone?
I was. You sent him to me this morning. I was like, bam. CTS, son.
Yeah.
It looks good. It's definitely Cadillac. You know, it's Cadillac in that just, I don't know, masculinely elegant way, I guess, is the best way I could possibly say that. It just, it's good. I dig it.
Yeah, I think this, the XTS was sort of a harbinger of, you know, like Cadillac still knows how to style a car, and this one really has its mojo working. And there are other details that have yet to be released, which we cannot talk about until next week. But this car's going to be pretty great. Going to be impressive, and I'm really encouraged with it. You can definitely see that the interior is a step up. I mean, Matt Wood.
Yeah, no, that's probably one of my favorite things that Audi's done in the recent past is that sort of matte wood trim. It looks so much better than that crap gloss stuff they used to stick in luxury cars. And Cadillac has sort of adopted that here.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the XTS has one of the best interiors.
Oh, so good.
Anywhere. It's just a really great interior. It makes up for Q in a lot of ways.
And like you were saying, you know, attention to detail is what does it. Down to the door handles, you know, just they feel solid and sculpted, and I don't know, it's just really well put together, and
it's Cadillac.
That's the best way to say it, and it you know, it looks like they've translated a lot of that to the CTS. So very very stoked. As long as they don't butcher it with a horrible base engine, cough ATS cough, it should be good.
I don't think you have to worry about the ATS base engine in this car. I think even its base engine will be something that's.
If that happens, I'm gonna get a newspaper. I'm gonna drive to Detroit, and I'm gonna start bopping. I'm bopping Cadillac executives on the face.
Well, you should do that wrong. Anyway. I mean, they do. Again, I see clearly in pictures they have based the entire center stack around Q. Mm-hmm. Q is terrible.
It's not. There are worse systems out there. It's not great. It doesn't do all the things it should.
Pretty bad. It's laggy, and it's infuriating. And I'm sure the Q engineers are like, well, you're just using it wrong. It's like, listen, I can hop into a car with Uconnect. I don't need to crack the manual. I don't need to get angry. I can just figure out how to work the thing, and it's fine. I can't do that in Q. I can't do that with my Ford Touch. Your thing is not done well.
Yeah, like, I'll agree with that.
You engineering people may enjoy it. Fine. Keep it. I don't want it. And capacitive touch buttons? No. Stop it. Again, with the newspaper. Just like smack them.
That is one of the things I really adored about the FRS. You know what was on the steering wheel? A horn and nothing else.
And it has...
It just had big dials for
HVAC,
and the radio had a single dial to control volume, and everything was right there at hand and super intuitive, and I took no time to figure out.
And it works.
All of it worked.
You can get exactly what you want. You don't have to take your eyes off the road. Yes, there's no like button to keep stabbing with your fingers because it doesn't react because it's a touchscreen or a capacitive thing, and it's like all I want to do is make it 68 degrees in here instead of 75 or whatever. You're like so aggravating, and I don't want to talk to the car to do it. I do not want to talk. I don't have a phone with Siri. I don't want a phone with Siri. I don't want to have a conversation with the machine.
Dan doesn't like talking to people, much less cars. So just you know,
you are correct. yep. June 68 degrees is cold for a senior. Shut up. Ustream. Another leak we saw was the Mercedes CLA 45 AMG. Okay, so this car, looking at it, knowing what you know about it, does that look like a front-wheel drive car to you? It's actually 4MATIC. It's all-wheel drive, but...
Right. But no, it doesn't look close. No.
It's based on a front-wheel drive platform.
Yeah, and no, I understand that.
It blew my mind. Also...
The CLA is a gorgeous little machine, and...
It is. Like, I don't think there's been a Mercedes, like a tiny Mercedes that looks as good since the 190.
Yeah, I think, you know, Stephen Ewing, one of our editors, probably said it best. He was like, you know, this is the first small Mercedes that I could actually see myself driving and living with and enjoying. And I think it's entirely accurate. I mean, it just, it looks proper Mercedes, and the AMG stuff just adds to that.
Here's the other thing. 360 horsepower. from a turbo 4. From a 2-liter turbo 4.
Can I, again, just underscores the fact that we live in the best possible car period ever.
Yeah.
4.5 seconds, all-wheel drive. Come on. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. I wonder what it's going to cost.
Stupid money.
Yeah,
stupid.
It's the AMG, so it's going to be expensive.
But man, that appreciation curve is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, especially since it's a Mercedes.
Actually, it's just going to fall off the face of the planet.
Mercedes, actually, they have this thing where they stubbornly, like, people think that they're worth a lot of money, even when they're clapped out pieces of crap. Like, go try to buy yourself an E-Class.
I would never do that.
I like the E-Class. Okay, so from the side, you can see it's got that sort of European pedestrian safety standard beaky nose, mm-hmm. and the wheel is set back. But that's really like the only indication that this is a front-wheel drive platform. I'm so impressed with that, because it's just, I mean, they must know the exact, well, they're German, so they calculated the exact angle to take pictures from to make this thing look as good as possible. But this is a car that is going to be pretty impressive to drive. I mean, the interior is pretty nice and AMG-like, although there's a big shiny piece of faux carbon fiber in there, and
it could be real carbon fiber. This is an AMG we're talking about.
It's true. So there's a big shiny piece of carbon fiber in there. So I don't know. It's surprising to see Mercedes going at this segment with such vigor, but BMW is there too. So you're going to see like AMG and M division front wheel drive based things soon. That's kind of weird.
My skin literally crawled when you said that.
Because, I mean, that was the provenance of cars like the Evo and the WRX, right? Like small front-wheel drive-based high-performance turbo ridiculousness.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. As long as they're not, like... I was going to say, as long as they're not doing it AMG Smart, but they've already done that, haven't they?
Yep.
The Smart depresses me.
As it should.
Yeah. It's not so much a car as a cosmic, ironic joke. So anyway, New York is going to shape up to be a pretty good show. That starts on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So we should have a bunch of news from that, the official reveals of all this stuff that's been leaking, and we'll be able to share more details. So we should look at questions from the Q&A. I think my favorite one from the night, I'm sure you've seen this, but my favorite one is, why is Dan so short and angry? Is he part dwarf?
Are you?
Short?
No, not, I know terribly. That you're short, and I know
I'm
that you're angry.
Super short.
How tall are you?
5'6".
That's pretty short. I mean, I consider myself short, and I'm 5'10", 5'11".
Fine.
I'm not saying that's a horrible thing. I'm just saying that you're...
I have no control over it.
You should probably embrace the fact that you're kind of short.
I've come to peace with this. I can fit in stuff that other people can't. So that's fine. Part dwarf? No. Not that I know of. Talk to me when osteoporosis has set in. Because I'm going to get shorter eventually as I get old. But actually, Grant from Nebraska. Nebraska. Really? The glass houses thing. You live in Nebraska.
Don't pick on Nebraska just because you're short and angry.
Just saying. I'd rather be short and angry in a place
where. All right. Would you, though? I don't think you would.
People and things and infrastructure. Okay. I'm like a grocery store when I want chocolate.
Oh, man. Have you ever been to Nebraska?
No.
All right. Do you eat a lot of chocolate?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Which explains.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Not a car question.
Anyway, he's asking for actual opinion. ATS, IS, or 3 Series?
Which ATS?
He did not specify. He just said...
If you're going with the 3.6, ATS.
Okay.
Moving on.
Well, but, I mean, 3 Series, you could just crank that all the way up to M3.
Hmm. Yeah, but he didn't say SF? M3. He didn't say M3. He said freaking 3 Series. 335i. Man. Probably. Pretty good. I really enjoy the ATS. I like that car a lot.
Yeah, especially the 3.6. I'm going to say ATS just because, like, I'm saying would be the choice that everybody thinks I'd make just to be an iconoclast, and I'm not that dumb. Even though they've redone the car.
And the IS is fine. It's just I certainly don't enjoy it as much as either the ATS or the 3 Series.
I haven't driven the new IS. Have you?
Not the new one.
So I don't know. I'll reserve judgment on that. But I just say of what I know, I'll go ATS because it's really a game of inches between those two cars. They're really not that far apart. So it comes down to your preference and what you like better about it. Like I think. You might find that the 3 Series steering is a little sharper than the ATS, but maybe not. I don't know. Like I know the ATS shifter is just sucky.
Yeah.
So, whatever. I'd go with the ATS because it'll probably be more reliable than the BMW. Again, send your hate mail to Zach.
Yep.
another thing... see, here's somebody from the Northeast, and he's bitching at us. Can you please stop talking about Buicks, Cadillacs, and Lincolns and talk about some other new cars? For example, yes, we know you love talking about the possible four-cylinder Ford Mustang, but what about the Fiesta ST? Talk about that thing. 200 horses on overboost, cheaper and lighter than a GTI. It seems completely like a great hot hatch. And before Jeff Ross says something completely uninteresting, like, yeah, it's just, it's small. I mean, I guess it's good to drive. No, just talk about it. So that was him giving Jeff Ross, who's not even here, crap.
Poor Jeff Ross. Yeah. Okay, so I haven't driven the Fiesta ST, though if I were shopping in that segment, there's no way I would end up in that car and not a Focus ST.
Yeah, right. Pretty much. The Fiesta...
Which is pretty much the Fiesta's trouble up one side and down the other. Like, yeah. The cost savings to car sacrifice is just way off there. That proportion is way skewed.
Like, okay, so, yeah, you're going to spend some money to have, like, the most interesting Fiesta, but you still have, like, the most interesting Fiesta instead of, like, just the Focus.
Right. Yeah, the freaking Focus ST is
badass,
cheap.
Yeah, it's not that expensive. Yes, the Focus ST is the one to buy. That's why we don't talk about the Fiesta ST. You know, all respect to Ford for building
23.7 base SG, for the Focus
because
ST.
The Focus ST can go slap around a GTI. Pretty
much. How much is the Fiesta ST? Let's look this up. Fiesta.
See, the thing about the Fiesta is like the actual stuff that's not going to change about the Fiesta with the high performance engine, and that is just operating the Fiesta with like the Euro Ford Button-O-Rama kind of thing that just
22,000 for the Fiesta.
No,
ST.
Come on!
Why would you
like
ever
two
do
grand
that?
More? Just I mean, come on! It's like $15 a month. Seriously?
Oh,
don't eat at Wendy's 2 days a week, and you're there. Done. That's why we don't talk about the Fiesta ST, because as fun as it is, that is a car that has no point because it overlaps.
Listen, I'm all for more fun cars to drive. It's just that the Fiesta ST strikes me as one of those cars that somebody's going to buy because a dealer bought it and couldn't move, and it sat on the lot forever until it got cheap, and somebody bought it instead of the Focus ST, which seems like an actual sorted put together car.
Maybe that it's different in Europe, where the Focus is like a big car to them, and the Fiesta is like the family car.
I guess it's just the Fiesta's. I don't know.
I bet the Fiesta's entertaining as hell.
I'm sure it's a laugh. I'm sure it's a lot of fun. It's just
you sound convinced.
I just, like I said, I cannot imagine a world where I would wind up in that car instead of the Focus ST.
So that Fiesta ST price came from the website?
Car and Driver. No, it came from Car and Driver.
Car and Driver, yeah.
I don't think they've released actual pricing.
So that's like an estimate.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the Fiesta is okay. It's solid. I really liked that about it. And so, certainly with more power, I think you could have yourself a pretty good time.
Or the Abarth. How would you not buy the Abarth instead?
Oh, I could see buying the Fiesta instead of the Abarth, because the Abarth is still a 500, and that car, like, as much as I like it, I also don't know that I can tolerate it like on a steady basis.
And I'm just enough of a jackass to enjoy that car all the time.
It's
so loud, and screw you, and yeah, I suck, but so do you.
It's Italian. It's that thing where it takes the hand and then you get under the chin.
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty much what that car. I mean, I don't know. It's just like it's the same as a Mini, right? Like it's got that kind of really extroverted style, and I could do the 500 more than the Mini.
I'm just the opposite. I would do a Mini before I did the 500, especially JCW, if I was just felt like lighting stacks of money on fire.
Now the Mini, the Abarth is not overwrought like the Mini is now. Like, there's no pizza pan in the middle of the dashboard in the 500. Like, and the seating position is just super weird. And it's like sitting on a bus. It's like sitting in a living room in the 500.
Yeah, but a living room that's all tippy and hilarious and torque steery and so awesome, like, exhaust note.
It's like sitting in a living room after.
It's like sitting in a living room
on acid, pretty much. Right?
Yeah, on acid that's on fire. I think it's probably it's so tragically hilarious. I don't know. I love that car because it's so miserable, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's not miserable. I mean, the 500 is actually quite
no for well for, done. For the cash you're spending, it's
pretty not miserable. That expensive. It's not Mini expensive.
It's still stupid expensive for not great fuel economy and a kind of crappy driving experience.
Okay,
I'm just saying.
Well, let's stick with the ridiculousness that is Fiat and Chrysler, and we saw the 2014 Cherokee. And word is that Jeep wants to sell 250,000 of them. So our friend RMT1 asks, do you think Jeep can actually sell 250,000 of them despite its looks? When will you or anyone for that matter get a chance to actually drive one? I don't know when we're going to drive them. I'm sure there's long lead stuff being scheduled even now. At 250,000 seems awfully ambitious to me. I'm not sure where that lands on the Zachometer.
That's a huge number. I heard that's like more than the number of Patriots they sold over the last 3 years combined. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, but the Patriot stinks.
Well, have you seen the Cherokee?
You know, I have, and I don't know.
I've seen all of
the pictures of the Cherokee, and like I know we're still sort of waiting to see like the back of it and stuff like that, and the Jalopnik pictures that spurred them to release the limited pictures that they did don't show it in its greatest light. But there are instances where I think it looks good doing whatever it's doing. So I don't know. I think that the hardcore Jeep buyers are going to be turned off by it.
Yeah, I think that's accurate, especially saddling with that Cherokee name. Man.
Well, Cherokee guys. Liberty is known as the Cherokee overseas. Like,
but not here in the States, and you know why? Because it's not the same vehicle. The Cherokee, and it's not just a name, not to Jeep guys, man. You're talking about a diehard, just fanatical buyer base.
But they're not going to buy it anyway. That's like
two guys literally just went out and bought.
They bought JKs. Used Jeeps.
Whatever.
Used Jeeps. So that does not count because
from
some
a
other
Jeep
sucker.
Dealer. Just yeah. saying.
But somebody else had to buy them first, you know? Mm. And so I think for the people they want to attract to the Cherokee, it's going to do well because it's going to be that much more refined compared to the Liberty, which is not refined at all. Mm-hmm. You know, basically, like, think about this, like going caliber to Dart.
Yeah.
Big difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So go Liberty to Cherokee. It's going to be that same kind of wide gulf where you get in the Cherokee and you're like,
whoa.
Yeah, this is nice. The styling, yes. The nose is an acquired taste. But I think, again, they focus grouped this thing and they knew that it was going to have that kind of reaction. They're going to get the attention of people who are going to actually spend money, and those people may actually like it. Crazy as that may sound.
Because
it's a little weird, but
it's more than a little weird.
The more you stare at the pictures, the better it gets. I think. Maybe. You clearly disagree.
Well, I think the dark color body cladding is not a good idea. I think it looks really rough on light colored cars. The darker ones, the sort of dark blue one, looks great. I'm sure it'll look great in black. Not great, but better than the white. I don't know. It just, there's a lot going on, and the fact that the 7-slat grill reaches up onto the hood is weird.
Yeah, I like that, and then I just sort of like, it's like a little strange. I think actually if the headlights, that motif where it's like, they almost remind me of the old J10 headlights, but they're too low for that. If they were larger and brought up, like, you could almost make it mimic the old full-size Jeep front end, especially with square headlights. But that's just me looking at it going, maybe. But I think they probably had some things to work out that they couldn't move given the platform that it's on. And one of those may be lighting. Although that's, again, we'll have to wait and talk to them. Maybe we can have Ralph back on to talk about it. When the pictures first hit, I did send a message to Chrysler and asked if we could get a quick chat with him, and the answer I got was a very quick no. I think they were in damage control mode that day. They were just like, things were on fire and stuff, and they were just like, yeah, no, not right now. Because, I mean, they're going to unveil this at New York anyway, so right. We're going to see it. And, you know, inside it's going to be way more space efficient, because that's another thing. Like, the Liberty, it looks roomy. It's not. So it'll be a better vehicle for the people who spend money on them. So
true.
I don't know. I'm hotly anticipating actually driving one.
Yeah. I just want to see one first. I just want to see if it's as bad as it looks.
All right. That's fair. So, I mean, you saw the FRS and you like it now better than you did in pictures.
This is true. It happens.
So I don't think you're going to think the same with the Cherokee. If you don't like it now, you may not like it then. But oh well. So, have you done anything to the horse? Or I saw that the latest post has gone up.
Yeah, latest post has gone up. The IRS conversion has been pretty widely received positively. Most folks seem to think I've made the right move there. No, the subframe braces are still sitting here in the living room. We went up to DC for a wedding last weekend, so I didn't get a chance to try and stick those in. The next post will follow all sorts of other hilarity, like trying to plumb up the rear brakes and dealing with getting rid of a bunch of bracketry that was no longer necessary. So if anybody ever wants to put this car back to a solid axle, they're going to have a real crappy time of doing it. So hopefully that will not be me.
Who's going to get that car? Is either going, you're just going to get bored with it, or it's gonna get balled up in some way.
Dan, don't put that evil on me. Look at you putting the evil on me, putting the hex on me.
No, I'm just saying, independent rear end. You're gonna have a limited slip in there. Or does it already?
Yes, it has a limited slip in there.
Okay,
it's in the Cobra.
Have you ever driven an independent rear suspension rear-wheel drive car with a limited slip?
Sure I have.
You know what they can sometimes do?
No.
Spin your ass right around.
Oh, that's any rear-wheel drive car. It'll be fine.
Well, yeah, but with a limited slip, they
can... The Miata's got a limited slip.
Yeah, well, you get them right out on that, like, 10/10 edge where they get hairy, and they can just decide, like, Oh, there's wheel slip. I'm going to send all the torque over there, and you're along for the ride. It can happen.
It'll be exciting either way. I'm sure it'll be a riot.
Yeah. Well, I hotly anticipate the next installment. Have you figured out what you're doing for power? Are you going to turbo it, or are you going to leave it?
I can't say yet. Yes, I know what I'm doing. Okay. No, I can't say. I can promise you that I will be, if not the only one of two or three guys.
Oh, so it's going to be a Wankel.
Actually, I'm going to put a Subaru. I'm going to put a boxer engine in the car. Either that or V10.
That'll fit well in the Fairmont there with the coil springs and stuff down low.
Should go great. Should go great. Mm-hmm. It's all about that center of gravity, Dan. Got to get that center of gravity in there. At the sacrifice of complexity and cost and all those fun
things. So,
packaging. Sorry.
Is it going to be a complex swap, or are we going to hear great expletive construction out of you or not?
Probably. I think there may be some firewall cutting involved.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's not the route I wanted to go. I thought it was going to be.
You were going to keep it pristine, right?
You know what? I'm not going to try to explain the.
I'm teasing you.
No. I'm serious. I'm not going to try to explain the thought process between me and the freaking project car, because it's so weird. Like I'm perfectly okay with the exterior looking like absolute crap, but when it comes to cutting on sheet metal and things like that, I don't want to sully the car. If that makes any sense. I don't know. It's a weird. Weird place inside my head.
I get it. But you know, it's just a Mustang. It's just four-cylinder Mustang.
I know. They made a freaking million of them. But no, the swap's exciting. It's definitely different. And hopefully, I gotta place some calls tomorrow. But hopefully, we can have an honest to God announcement here sometime soon.
Good.
But, yeah. So. Good.
Well, we'll wrap it up this week before we head to New York, so stay tuned for that coverage. The Autoblog podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. So no matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. So that's it. We can be found at, we're on Twitter at Autoblog Podcast, podcast at autoblog.com. Let us know how we're doing. Send in questions. We have the Q&A on the post, and there's iTunes as well. You can leave feedback, and we will see you next week.
See you guys.